This podcast was recorded on April 20th, 2015.
Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. And there's been some superhero news.
Right.
The Batman vs. Superman trailer has leaked online. I heard it leaked, and then Zack Snyder has decided to officially release it online prior to its theatrical release.
Not probably the best thing to do since it's already leaked.
It's already out there. You want to get ahead of it. So what do you think of the trailer, Wayne?
It was dark.
It's very dark. Boy, they just blend into the background. I can't see anybody asking for that. I understand you don't want to have a four-color comic book-style movie, but I think they're taking so much color out of the costumes and making the background or the whole overall movie so dark that it's really hard to distinguish them.
Well, we kind of discussed this before, and I know you said before that you can't imagine anybody requesting this. Well, obviously the studio did, otherwise they would not have picked Zack Snyder, or otherwise we would not be seeing this incredibly dark visually trailer, because they would have said, nope, that's not what we want, get it out of here, and would have picked somebody else. I'm imagining, right? I don't think they would have gotten so far into the filming and production process and then figure out that Zack Snyder was going to darken it up. So I don't know why someone would want it to look like that, but somebody did.
Well, you got the Dark Knight and the slightly less Dark Knight.
Right. You got the Dark Knight, who in this case is Superman, and yeah.
The Darker Knight. Batman. The Darkest Knight, which would be the third superhero that they're going to have to roll out in the third movie. I don't know. I haven't seen Superman Returns. No, I have seen Superman Returns. I haven't seen Man of Steel.
I was about to say, was that memorable, huh?
I actually like the people that they're casting for Superman. I just don't particularly care for the movies that they're in. Yeah, you have a murdering Superman and just kind of a bleak movie. And then Batman versus Superman looks pretty bleak.
I don't know what to tell you. This is what people want.
I suppose so, but do they want that? Because this is not Superman 2. This is now, you got to tack on Batman versus Superman. And when this underperforms, are they going to have to add in a third superhero?
Probably.
Flash versus Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. Flash. Yeah. Eventually, wouldn't you have the entire Justice League?
Well, this is Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. And since we know Aquaman and Wonder Woman are going to be in it, so you can imagine that they'll form some sort of Justice League after the misunderstanding of Batman versus Superman.
Sorry about killing all those people. Now we're best buddies.
Sorry about that. Speaking of killing, in the trailer, it looks like Batman is killing people in the Batwing, or gunning them down. So unless they pull a G.I. Joe style, hey, they just escaped from that exploding truck in time.
They're just lasers that make people fall over.
Although there's one theory online that says we don't actually see Batman in the Batwing. So somebody could be controlling it, or somebody else could be in there, and that could be the misunderstanding that leads to Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. Or the misunderstanding could be Batman reacting to Superman being worshipped as a god, and of course in the trailer, we see four soldiers that kneel when they see Superman, and they have Superman crests.
Right.
Of course, that could be a little trailer sleight of hand. They could be...
something else?
They could be like cultists. Okay, be in service of Lex Luthor, and maybe Lex Luthor wants to worship Superman and gets rejected. So, there could be a lot going on there. Superman could reject them and, why are you guys kneeling down to me?
Right. Or it could be like, Lex Luthor setting people up so it looks like they worship Superman and causing people to misunderstand him. Yeah. Absolutely. I could have written it. And you know what? It would have been a lot clearer than Zack Snyder's movie. Visually speaking.
Well, that's the thing. It's supposed to get you thinking. I mean, when I watch a Marvel movie...
Because that's all you have to do, because it's so dark. I'm going to sit here and think, because I'm in a dark theater.
Can't really follow what's going on there. I think Superman's winning right now. But it could be Batman, because they look almost the same. I don't know, is DC trying to stake out the cerebral superhero movie territory and leave Marvel to the fun superhero movies?
Maybe.
Because if you did, why'd you pick Zack Snyder? Like, he's not really the guy you want following up Christopher Nolan. But what really bothered me about the trailer...
Oh, here we go. I thought we were done.
Yeah. No, it was... I guess what bothers me most about this is people think this was a cool line where, hey, you have Superman coming down and Batman says, tell me, do you bleed? You will? And you're like, well, why'd you ask the question?
Right. And I had earful of this before, which I agree it is grammatically incorrect. And
you could have changed it easily. You could have said, tell me, Do you know the color of your blood? You will. You know, kind of like that.
Or
have you ever seen your blood?
Yeah, the other one I thought was better. Yeah, have you ever seen your own blood? Because you will. Yeah.
Yeah.
That works. Yeah. It was kind of like, I kind of likened it to the line in Avengers, where, Mark Ruffalo says, as the Hulk, the secret is I'm always angry. And at the time in the movie, you're kind of like, yeah, go be the Hulk and smash things. And then a couple minutes later, you're like, hold on.
What does that mean?
That doesn't really make any sense. Yeah, you're always angry. So wouldn't that mean you're the Hulk all the time? I don't get it. So
yeah, you say, what's my secret? Oh, I can control it. Oh, okay. That's what you meant to say. I watched that with my wife, and she's like, what was that supposed to mean?
Right.
It's interesting when you watch a movie with somebody where English is like their second language or their third language, and then they watch something that doesn't make sense on the film, and then they're like, oh, maybe the subtitles were off, misunderstood what he was saying. So they kind of beat themselves up a bit.
Right, because they're trying to figure out, because obviously it must make sense.
Yeah, and maybe that's why some of these movies do so well with international audiences, because if something doesn't make sense, they're like, whatever. Okay, now he's beating up something. Okay, I guess I just missed the nuance of what he said. And you're like, no, you didn't miss anything.
Or for the international audience, because, they're going to put the subtitles under it. Maybe the subtitles actually do make sense.
Yeah, he's like, I can control that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, maybe the, cool. maybe the yeah. subtitles for the Hulk said, the secret is, I can control my anger.
Yeah. You're like, oh, I get it. Yeah, I can turn in the Hulk at will, is what he said. Mm-hmm. And maybe the subtitles for Batman versus Superman or something like, tell me. Or maybe they don't even do tell me. It's just, if you can bleed, you will now, or something like
right.
that.
Or I'm going to make you bleed now.
Yeah, it's just to say, I'm going to shoot you now. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll
have to wait until it comes out over here on DVD probably, and then, rent it and figure out what it says.
Well, if you can make it out.
Oh.
Oh, you mean the subtitles?
The subtitles. I meant the subtitles.
Who's speaking there? I don't know.
They would stand out crystal clear against that black background.
No, this is true. Yeah, well, I haven't broken down and gotten Man of Steel, so I don't know if I'll break down and get Batman versus Superman when it comes out. I don't know. Yeah, and I should be excited. I like Dark Knight Returns, and they clearly ripped that off a lot. To do it. I mean, they even have Batman with a hunting rifle on top of that tower, like in Dark Knight Returns.
Right.
Except when the Zack Snyder, he's actually like shooting people in the head.
In slow motion, with buckets of blood in slow motion popping out, I'm sure.
Yeah, Joker has a quick appearance, and then he just snipes him in the head. He kills off his whole rogues gallery. That's why he has to fight Superman. That's all that's left. Riddle me this back.
Yeah.
Well, moving on to the episode. And this is a Pantheon Pandemonium, which we haven't done for a very, very long time.
Yes, we haven't.
And I think one of the reasons why we haven't done a Pantheon Pandemonium is we've kind of exhausted the big three in the mythology, and then we're wondering if we should do an actual living religion.
Like, I'm sure there are other ancient religions that we could do, but we've kind of done the major ones, the ones everybody knows, and the ones there seem to be the most information about. So
and voodoo. We did voodoo.
Right.
That was, voodoo, we kicked it off with voodoo.
But yeah, I think this is one of the, this is the first, major modern religion that we are doing as a Pantheon Pandemonium.
Well, as we found out, it is the biggest religion in the world.
Which I was fairly surprised about.
Yeah. The close second was the Muslim faith. And of course, we're talking about Christianity.
Right. I was about to say, we haven't actually said what we're doing.
Oh, we're so coy. Tell me, do you know what religion you're talking?
You're going to do that the whole episode, aren't you?
Hey, actually, that would have worked. Tell me, do you know what religion we're talking about? You will. Yeah, see, that makes sense.
No, it doesn't, because people will have read the title to the episode before they started listening.
No, because... All right. Well, if you
gotcha.
Don't, you will. Yeah. Oh, I guess this is really hard. Oh, sorry. All is forgiven, Zack Snyder. So, of course, because we are talking about a faith that a lot of people still practice... We do have to put a disclaimer. Disclaimer number one, of course, we're not trying to offend anybody, and putting it in a thing called Pantheon Pandemonium, are we no way implying that we think that this is fake or should be alongside mythology such as the Greek pantheon. Disclaimer number two, because it's a living religion and people practice this faith, there are a lot of experts out there and people who know a lot more about this religion than we do. So we're not going to give you a history of Christianity and certainly there are better sources if you want to find out more about this faith. What we're going to do is like what we do in all our Pantheon Pandemoniums is we've pulled out a few elements that we think are particularly interesting and which you can apply to any religion. in your game world, and we think that would make your gaming experience a little bit more fun.
Right. Despite being Pantheon Pandemonium, I mean, you don't even have to apply it to religious characters.
Like, that's true.
It's kind of like stuff for the setting, you know, of your world. And yeah, as Lyle said, the elements we're going to pull out of Christianity aren't even necessarily exclusive to Christianity. As with all our Pantheon Pandemoniums, they're just elements we think or we felt were interesting about the religion being discussed.
And there's certainly a lot of settings out there which incorporate Christianity. I mean, you could play modern times. It's sort of the default as you're playing a Judeo-Christian world in a lot of respects, depending on which country you're playing in. And certainly some settings have done very well, like a Fading Suns comes to mind immediately, incorporating Christianity and putting it into the future and how that would manifest itself. Dune, it's not necessarily a game setting, it's just like a science fiction setting. It does a very good job of, I guess, progressing Christianity. I don't want to say that Christianity isn't progressive, but imagining what it would be like in the future.
Right. No, you bring that up. Like, I guess a lot of, especially modern, mystery settings. I kind of think, like, if you play, like, X-Files or something like that, then, just because that's kind of the default for the Western world, that's the religion you're playing with. I hadn't even really thought about, like, you know, the movie Indiana Jones and, you know.
Oh, that's a good one. I was thinking Supernatural as well.
Okay, pretty much.
Yeah, certainly Indiana Jones with Holy Grail.
Yeah, Holy Grail.
Ark of the Covenant.
Yep. So, that was Raiders of the Lost Ark flew out of my head as soon as I said Indiana Jones, even though that's the one I was talking about. But, stuff like that.
There's also the Last Crusade. It's got the Holy Grail.
Yep, Last Crusade. Like, even if you don't expressly say that you are playing in, you know, a Christian-based game, you are with those kind of relics.
Yeah. And if you're playing like Old World of Darkness, hey, Descendants of Cain, if you have Cain, you've got God. Well, with the world's longest disclaimer, we will move on to the actual element. And the first element we have is the reboot, or the old on top of the new. So reboot's very popular with movies and TV series, and also popular with Christianity, because you have the Old Testament and the New Testament. And what we liked about this, I mean, there's a lot of things we liked about it. One of the things was you have these two texts that the same religion or the same faith considers like canon, but they contradict each other. The Old Testament would have things like an eye for an eye, a classic, and the New Testament has turn the other cheek.
Right.
So you could say it's a reboot or it's a revamp or a progression of the religion.
As you said, kind of both Judaism and Christianity look at the Old Testament as kind of being canon for the religion. And then Christianity kind of goes on and builds on top of that, where obviously Judaism stops at the Old Testament. That's one of the things that separates the two religions. So it is kind of like a reboot, as you said. And I felt it was kind of different from syncretism, if I'm saying that correctly, where, I guess to use the Roman example, they basically used Greek religion and kind of mixed it with their own, and they adopted a lot of the, I guess, customs and gods and, I guess, rites, for lack of a better term, into their religion and kind of made a new thing. But I feel they combined these religions more than Christianity did, where Christianity kind of built on a foundation of Judaism, but didn't really mix the two religions together all that much.
Yeah, that's a good point. And for people who are unfamiliar with the term syncretism, it's about the melding and combining of religions and faiths and beliefs and traditions. And that's not to say that Christianity didn't use that. I mean, the Roman emperors used syncretism, something that they had a lot of practice with, in order to expand the faith. And I think Christmas might be a classic example. Mm. Not necessarily the Romans doing that, but, you know, when they're expanding into Gaul and Germania, incorporating different pagan practices into the religion to make it more palatable for the different peoples.
Right. And I guess that's not to say that Christianity hasn't, I guess, absorbed or adopted other religions' elements. Because, again, you talking about things like, you know, Christmas made me think of Easter, where that was originally a pagan celebration. you know, and, and lots of things in Christianity are adopted from pagan religions.
No, but I do see your point in the fact that they don't hide it. When you, in some respects, such as Easter, you could say that the, or Christmas, where it's kind of hidden.
Mm, right.
Because they do, oh, well, it's the birth of Christ, and we celebrate all of these things, and you're like, well, hey, but, you know, it's kind of about the same time as you have, like, these different, or these past pagan festivals.
Right, right.
And these traditions we use in these pagan festivals. But with the Old Testament and the New Testament, it's not hidden. I mean, Abraham is still Abraham.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you still have got, Genesis is still Genesis for both the faiths. It's just they've added the New Testament. And of course, Judaism has Jesus Christ in a certain respect, just not as the Son of God.
Right. That the hidden thing is exactly what I was going to bring up, because things like Easter and Christmas, my feeling is Christianity has hidden the fact that they were really adapted from other religions. And they've kind of said, no, it's all about these things now. Whereas, you know, the Greek and Roman example, I, of course, no one really knows now since no one was alive, or no one is alive from back then. But I get the sense where it was kind of more of like an open secret. It's like, oh, yeah, you can call that guy Jupiter, or you can call that guy Zeus, because he's the same thing, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, Christianity is like, no, it's this now. But as you said, then you go to the Old Testament and the New Testament, and nothing in there is, I guess, hidden, for lack of a better term. They're the same people across the same books, and they kind of build on each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, us living in Japan, I think we have at least a pretty decent idea of how syncretism works, at least for pop culture, because you look at things like, you know, Christmas here, or even, you know, the Colonel Sanders outside of the KFC, or, and all these things that have been adopted from Western, primarily, I guess, like, you know, North American culture, but it's different here. Christmas here happens on the 24th. It's kind of about presents, but usually only for kids, and it's kind of become a romantic date night. I mean, a lot of the trappings are still there, but a lot of the context isn't. So sometimes for me it feels kind of weird where I'm like, I know what's going on, or like we just had Easter recently and there's sometimes Easter decorations, but again, there's kind of no, maybe I hate to say that there's no substance to it anymore, because they're just taking the trappings and the elements, but without really with what they mean. So yeah, that's kind of our, I guess, firsthand experience with syncretism being over here in Japan.
Now, how does that work for a game world? I suppose it works where you have the old faith and the new faith coexisting, and the new faith hasn't completely rejected the teachings of the old faith. So it's slightly different than, let's say, a Game of Thrones,
right,
where you have the old gods of the north, which I imagine were worshipped through Westeros a bit more, or it was a bit more widespread in the past, and then the Seven came, and the Seven kind of supplanted the old gods in the south. Whereas this is, whatever lessons that the old gods were providing, they were still valid. But just on top of that, you do have now have the new faith, and you can still have people who just only adhere to the old faith.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I guess, for lack of a better way to put it, like the Jewish people, you would say, adhere to the old faith or the original faith, maybe
right.
Be a nicer way to put that. But then you now have people that not only have their core beliefs, not necessarily all of their traditions and practices, their core beliefs, but then they've also added to that with this new faith.
Mm.
And then they coexist. That doesn't mean that they get along.
Right, right.
But certainly they coexist.
No, that's a good point. I was thinking, you know, to put it kind of in real world terms. Yeah, okay. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam are along like a time scale. They're kind of the same thing up to certain points, right? Judaism and Christianity split with the coming of Jesus because, you know, Christians believe, yep, he's, you know, the Son of God, where Jewish people believe he isn't. And then, you know, there's another split when you get to Christianity, Islam, because Islam says, yes, Jesus was prophet, but his message kind of got corrupted, and Muhammad is the latest one. So you could do the same thing in your game world where it's like, yep, these two faiths are the same up to this point, and here's where they diverge, and kind of the newer faith has put new stuff on it, but they still believe some, most, all of what the quote-unquote older faith believes. And if you're in a fantasy world, then there could be any number of different ways that split comes about.
No, absolutely. And you're talking about Islam, you would say, might even say that the newest faith.
Right, right.
And then Christianity would be the middle faith.
Mm, middle child.
I mean, there's different things that you can do with that. I mean, there are different reasons why you might want to incorporate this kind of reboot or this old and new, as opposed to using a more classic pantheon. One of the reasons is it's easier to know what the rules are of the faith because you're just building on the other. They're not diametrically opposed. It can also highlight stories that want to focus on the similarities and the differences, or sort of the craziness of religious clashes when you say, well, it's all the same God. Why are we fighting?
No, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think doing this could help make your story more gray because you don't have these two different faiths or gods or whatever. No, you have essentially the same one who split over something or believe up to a certain point. And yeah, I do think it's a good way to highlight the, no, you're actually pretty much worshiping the same God. Except, you know, portion A over here believes one thing and portion B over here believes most, but not all of that. And that's why you are different. And it doesn't really make that much sense for you to fight, but hey, you are.
Yeah. And also, we all come from a monotheistic background, because even if you're like Buddhist or Christian or Muslim or Jewish, you believe in the idea of this one God as opposed to a pantheon of gods. So that's easier for people to wrap their heads around. So, I mean, if you're looking at a game system where faith is providing some sort of power, people can get it's coming from that one source, and then people are interpreting it in different ways. Kind of have the idea of where, okay, I get that there's that supreme being that's providing the power, but you still have the differences on the material plane.
Okay, I was wondering, while you were saying that, I was wondering if that would make things easier or more difficult, and I think it would actually kind of do both, because, it kind of makes things grayer, where you could say, okay, in this world where we have magic, and it's a, you know, a monotheistic setting, well then, yeah, everybody knows that magic is going to come from this one person, which could make it difficult to rectify having different types of schools or different types of magic if they're all coming from the same place. Again, I'm kind of thinking of D&D and their, you know, different schools of magic when you go to the arcane class. And then you also have divine, you know, there's that big split there. So if it's magic is all coming from the same singular deity, the fact that there are two different kinds of magic or more might be kind of difficult to explain. But, on the other hand, it could make it interesting where then it comes down much more to your power is the same. How you are choosing to use that makes you very different. And that, again, I think would make it very gray, where it's like, you know, you run into two spellcasters. Wow, that one is your typical white hat mage. That one is your typical kind of like black hat mage. Instead of one being fueled by, you know, angelic power and the other being fueled by demonic power, they're fueled by the same thing. And really
different
the only difference
the power,
is, right, either different aspects or even just like different personal choices on how they're choosing to use that power. Because even with different aspects, again, thinking of like Game of Thrones, there's the, you know, the seven. And yeah, okay, there's the different aspects there. Or even like the stranger, right, might have different aspects. But, I mean, if there were different aspects, you could say, oh, no, I'm just kind of being the chaos or the dark side of this one god, where you're choosing to be the light or the order side. But, yeah, okay, they're still the same thing, but I think it makes it even kind of more interesting if it's, no, we're pretty much getting exactly the same power, and just because of the medium it's going through, us, we're choosing to use it differently.
Or if you draw directly from the Old Testament and the New Testament, I choose to follow more closely to the Old Testament, the more eye for an eye God, the unforgiving God, and someone else could be, well, I'm going to follow more of the New Testament, the turn the other cheek, the forgiving God. Easily imagine what kind of powers would derive from that.
Why is my power all about eyes and taking them out?
Or if you look at something like H.P. Lovecraft and the type of gods he had, the elder gods, and or even Greek mythology, where you talk about the Titans and the Titans were replaced by the gods. And what we're talking about, the Titans aren't replaced by the gods, just the gods are added to it. Now, you can like really contrast the old versus new. Like maybe if you worship the old aspect of the god or older gods, then you get like a real primordial, real elemental power. Whereas if you follow the newer tenets or the newer gods, because they all coexist or the aspects coexist, you get some sort of more refined power, but maybe less powerful.
I like that idea, yeah.
And since we're talking about schisms and divisions, though, that leads into our next element that we really liked, and that is the idea of the different schisms or denominations that Christianity has.
Of which there are a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean, and perhaps a nicer way to put it is interpretations of the same faith. And we've talked about the Old Testament and the New Testament, but even within the new followers of the New Testament, you're still going to have people that interpret things in a different way.
Right, and that's what led to many denominations and many schisms, is interpretations of the same book. One of the splits is that the Bible should be taken kind of literally, and one of the other major splits is that it should be taken more as like allegory, which I thought was a pretty interesting split and something to add to your game world. You know, lots of settings have like vague prophecies and things like that. So I could see there being a religious group that splits between this, like, well, okay, we don't really know what it means. And it's more to be like morals or you know, read a bit looser and open to interpretation, where the other goes, nope, this is exactly how it happens because it's written down.
I didn't expect you to say that. That's quite interesting, though, in that, I mean, there's a lot of things you can do with that. One of it can help you reconcile a very religious society with a scientific society.
Okay.
Because there are enough adherents to the idea that the faith is, or let's say the Bible, should be taken as a guide or a code of principles as opposed to some sort of literal history. Then you can have people still follow the faith or even get faith powers, because if you look at something like Mage, which of course is more magic versus technology, but you can still take that idea as being faith versus science, in that the more you believe in science, the weaker faith gets. Torg does that. I mean, if you have a very high-tech world, faith might be quite low, except if you have something like the cyber papacy. But you can have people that think, well, that's not a scientific manual or a history book. That's a guide to our beliefs, so we can then push forward on these other things.
Yeah, I guess it's, you know, kind of like, well, exactly like, you know, different denominations that exist now, where some people, you can be both a scientist and a Christian, and other people, you're kind of one or the other.
Yeah. What I liked about the interpretations element or the schisms, the academic nature of some of these divisions, like if we look at Arianism and how that came about, and they were disputing the Trinity.
Okay.
So what became the main creed, the Nicene Creed, talks about like this Holy Trinity, and that they all, you know, God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit, they're all one, even though Jesus comes from God and is the Son of God. And people that follow Arianism think, no, you know, he can't be both. Jesus is distinct from God.
Right.
And when we look at that, we think, wow, you know, why are you fighting over that? But, I mean, that was an important thing there.
No, that you're exactly right. And the thing I like about the different denominations and the schism between what is essentially kind of one religion is exactly what you said. Like, there can be major splits between kind of what other people would consider minor differences. And yeah, I mean, some of these splits came about just because someone didn't want to stay married to his wife, but the church didn't allow divorce. So, hey, I made my own church over that kind of one little thing. And not something that always bugs me, but one of the things about a default setting like D&D, where you have a pantheon of gods who can be incredibly different from one another. And I know it's a game, but you have to suspend your disbelief about why there are these very often radically different gods usually being worshipped in the same city, or at least the same setting. Kind of doesn't make sense. Where you have these schisms, and to an outsider, they're essentially the same religion because they agree on many principles or tenets or kind of the basic, you know, building blocks of their faith, but you can still have these different groups. And to these groups, it's a big deal because, you know, hey, on the one hand, these people believe that, oh, the Trinity is three things and one thing, while the other side believes that, nope, you're either one. You have to be, you know, Jesus was not the Father and the Holy Ghost. He was just himself. So I think that makes, I hate to say it, but I think it makes a little more sense to have multiple religions in the same setting, because they're different enough to be separate religions, but they're still compatible because they still basically believe the same thing. And if there was an outside force coming in, I could see them kind of acting together because, you know, they're all essentially the same thing.
Yeah, a few things from that. One, like, how cool would it be to walk into a temple and you have priests or priestesses debating what different things mean, or being a priest and kind of looking more carefully into, or looking more closely into your faith,
right?
And not just looking at a list of powers that you derive from it. Another thing is, because they're all similar, like, people would all have the same base to work from. So all your players kind of understand what the core religion is, but knows that there's different denominations.
Right.
And then that can be interesting, is what's splitting these people? It could be, yeah, something like the Trinity. Or it could be their, how they view families. I mean, if you look at, and I'm not saying that this is the reason why Mormons separated from other Christian faiths, but I mean, that is one of the differences that they had, was the idea of polygamy. So you can have people, well, they worship the same faith. One of the things is that they believe that you can have multiple spouses, although it might be multiple wives, not husbands.
Probably is, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I guess like building on that, like one of the, again, getting back to Japan, one of the interesting things about here is there's, I don't know if it's a full denomination, but there is a group of Christians here who believe that Jesus actually wasn't crucified. Instead, that was his brother that was crucified, and that Jesus somehow made his way to Japan and lived out the rest of his days here, kind of preaching over here in Japan. And there's actually a tomb where Jesus is buried. Okay, fair enough. I'm sure other Christians would disagree with them, but both of them would agree about the basic tenets of Christianity. And getting back to what you said about how exciting would it be to kind of walk into a temple and have, you know, see priests and priestesses kind of having an academic discussion of the differences between the religion. Okay, maybe it wouldn't be that exciting for the players, you know. Can we fight something now? You know? Yeah. But I think that would be interesting, and that would be kind of exciting where, yeah, instead of just picking powers from a list, there's a little bit about, okay, here's what this denomination believes, here's what this other denomination believes, here are the differences. And that would be another way to bring a party together through something that I think doesn't really happen all that often, religion. I mean, like, maybe you have, like, clerics and maybe priests and paladins in the D&D sense, but very rarely are people of the same religion. Because, again, we've kind of discussed before that unless you're a divine spellcasting class, you don't really get any benefit from following any kind of religion, so why follow any? But the other thing about the schisms or the denominations is, okay, if you're playing a religious character, again, especially in D&D, usually there's some kind of write-up about the tenets of that god or what's going on, but then that seems really hard to do in play, especially paladins, right? They always kind of end up deviating from the beliefs of their god. So rather than being punished and losing powers because they broke whatever tenet, I think it would be kind of a lot more interesting if it was, okay, you know, you're probably not that religion anymore. You are this other denomination because of that difference in beliefs. And maybe, okay, maybe you would lose your powers, but it would be about like the, you know, the church wouldn't excommunicate you or chuck you out. It would just kind of be like, you're not really one of us now, you should probably go join this other denomination, which, you know, conversion doesn't seem to happen all that much in games, but I think it's something that could happen more often, especially following along with the denominations, because a conversion wouldn't have to be this radical change from one god to another, you know, again, right. You know, it would just be, I kind of believe this minor thing now, but all the rest of my beliefs are still intact.
Yeah. Well, you can, yeah, your players can now have a role in shaping the religion. They can create their own denomination, which is something that would be difficult to do if you have an established pantheon. The players can't really create their own god to have something that fits them better. I'm sure they can if you allow them to add to the pantheon, but a denomination would be even easier where they go, well, I believe a lot of this, but I think we should deviate here.
Right.
I want to be a murdering paladin. I don't think there's any problem with that. Right. So therefore, I want to be when I feel it's okay, I can murder.
Right.
You know, if the guy's not giving me information, I can stab him or start cutting off pieces of his body. And that's my denomination.
The murder hobo denomination. Right.
Yeah. Sorry, one thing about the academic interpretations of the religion, it might be harder to do if you have a very active god or active pantheon, because the idea is like, sorry, how should we interpret this Holy Trinity? Are they all distinct from each other? Are they all distinct but united? Just a sec, I'll talk to Palo
hold on,
now.
Let me cast a 20th level wish and figure it out, or something.
Yeah,
like
just, I'll just pray and talk to my god. You know, you don't have to give me spells tomorrow, just tell me the answer to this. All right, we've got it, so there's no council.
So you guys were wrong,
But I like the idea of a more opaque nature of the religion, which is something, is the reason why we have schisms and interpretations, and of course, more cynical reasons, such as the desire to divorce a wife.
And marry someone else, yeah.
Yeah, it's that people don't know necessarily what the gods are saying, or what God is saying, so they have to try to interpret it.
No, that's a good point, and I think the idea of the different schisms, and especially having the players involved in forming new religions, would only work in a setting where the gods don't take an active hand in mortal affairs or are aloof, you know. Otherwise, as you said, they're just like, hey, what's the correct answer here? And you'll get one.
That can also explain why they're not so quick to abandon the old gods or the old faith.
What if we're wrong?
What if we're wrong? I mean, sure, we believe in the new faith, but let's not be so quick to jettison everything from the old faith. Because just with Christianity, Jesus was Jewish. Right. So he comes from the old faith. So we're like, well, he's our connection to the old face, so we can't abandon that.
No, that's a really good point, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll just keep everything.
Yeah, yeah. On the one hand, it's kind of like maybe a bit selfish where you could say, no, in case we were wrong, we were still kind of following most of the original, you know, religion. But I guess on a less cynical note, it's a bit respectful where you can say, okay, yep, the founder of our faith was originally this religion, so let's not completely chuck that under the bus. Let's honor that and accept most of that.
Right. Another thing I like about the idea of denominations and interpretations and keeping most of the religion the same is when you have, I guess, a narrow pantheon or a limited pantheon, then it allows you to have a very deep pantheon.
Okay.
Or religion. So much is similar. You focus on what the differences are and then really explore those.
Okay.
And we also touched on this a little bit in festivals, is that if you have a lot of things that are similar, the players can easily grasp and understand the religion because it's all basically the same, but then it allows you to highlight the differences.
No, you're exactly right. Yeah.
You don't have to explain everything about the religion of this brand, completely brand new religion, and hope they pick out the thing you want. You can just highlight, okay, this is the one thing that's different between these people
right.
as far as their faith goes.
Right. On the one hand, yeah. On the other hand, well, I mean, you are running a game, so hopefully you will know about, you know, the religions in your game. But I'm just thinking of, like, my wife here, and she watches a lot of American TV, and, you know, she's seen people who are, like, Catholic on TV and not really understood, and she knows I was raised Christian, and so she asked me, oh, did you have to do the thing where you kneel in the little box for confession? I'm like, no, not really. We didn't do that. And she's like, well, I thought you were Christian. I'm like, I was, but I wasn't that kind of Christian.
Right? Oh, okay.
And then having to explain, okay, that's Catholicism. And she's like, what's the difference? I'm like, let me get back to you on that. We don't kneel in a little confession box for one.
You know, I'm Catholic and I've never kneeled in a box.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, see, that just makes it even more confusing.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been in a church that had a confessional like that.
Right.
You would have a room and you would sit in the chair and face the priest and confess your sins. And then people who didn't like that, because some older Catholics don't like facing the priest and confessing the sins.
Right.
Once a year or twice a year, you can show up for a special service to be absolved of your sins and you kind of confess to yourself. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all of that, I mean, just the thing to take away there is, yeah, it would be great to have these differences.
Mm-hmm.
If you play them up, the players will probably ask what they are, and players being players, they're going to latch on to, hey, we really want to know those differences, so
yeah.
Make sure you have them ready.
Yeah, instead of calling them Catholics, you can call them the confessors.
I wasn't thinking that literal, but yeah, okay.
I mean, Catholic actually means universal, and that reflects what people thought the Catholic faith was back then. It was the universal faith. It was the Christian faith. I mean, everybody knows Catholics have confession, so... But in your game, you're not going to have that luxury of people being familiar with Catholicism and having a religion that's been around for 2 millennia. Even if it's just a nickname for the religion, you could say, well, yeah, they're the confessors. They're the, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a nice way to say polygamists, but I guess I can't.
Many wives are?
Yeah, like the large familyers,
right,
I don't know.
Right.
Well, I mean, you could have like a quasi-Christian faith, but they don't have the same restrictions on money. You know, well, the New Testament talks about kind of glorifies poverty and sharing the wealth, but you could have like a capitalist Christian. That would be pretty cool.
What would that look like, yeah.
Yeah, you port Christianity into like the Shadowrun world, and I'm sure it has Christianity, or the cyberpunk world, but really play that up. It's mega corporations, but their particular denomination thinks that greed is good. It's kind of like the Gordon Gekko Christian faith.
Well, hey, probably wouldn't be that far off from, you know, the populace gets tithes and all that goes to the church.
Well, that could be why. I mean, they think that we make a percentage of your earnings, so we want you to earn as much as possible.
I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
I like the bent there. Yeah, it's very capitalist, but also seemingly altruistic at the same time.
Yeah. And that's one of the advantages of Christianity. And I'm not saying Christianity is there to be your plaything for a game. But people are very familiar with Christianity. Even if you're Jewish, you're very familiar what Christianity is. Even if you're Muslim, you're very familiar what it is. And it allows you to play with it a little bit more. But if you go to Game of Thrones and, oh, I'm going to do the seven, but I want to adjust it. People are going to be, okay, so what, the seven, what? And we mentioned it enough, but we actually thought the Trinity, the Holy Trinity, was an interesting element of Christianity, and it's certainly an important part of Christianity.
I mean, it's one of the things that possibly caused some of the different denominations and schisms in the church.
And what we liked about the Holy Trinity, if we take the beliefs from the Nicene Creed, or let's just say more mainstream Christianity, and the idea is that Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, they're all separate but the same, or united, or the same thing.
Right.
And that's illogical in many respects. But the idea that you can have things in your religion that don't make sense, but it just is.
Yeah, so one of the things that holds many of the branches of Christianity together is the belief in the Trinity, that there is one God in three persons, and they are distinct from each other, but they're also the same. Another way I read it is that they're perfect by themselves, but they're also perfect together, and kind of are separate things, but can also sort of not be separated from each other. And as Lyle was saying, that doesn't make a lot of sense if you look at it from, I guess, a rational standpoint. But we're talking about religion and faith, and therefore it doesn't have to make sense.
Yeah, and one thing we want to point out, it doesn't mean that people that believe this are stupid. A lot of them embrace it. I mean, when they have that schism we talked about, and the reason why Arianism broke off, is they acknowledge that both sides acknowledged that it could be illogical, and debating, well, what is the true nature? But it just is. I mean, you have to have faith and you have to believe it.
Right.
And I think that kind of adds something, like when you have an aspect of religion. And I think maybe one of the reasons why the fictional cosmology seems so watered down is because they kind of make sense.
Because they're all distinct individuals?
They're all distinct individuals, and they don't have unusual rules or unusual aspects. And I mean, they actually exist, so it's not like believing them is a leap of faith.
Right.
But having a religion that does require certain leaps of faith, where you can't explain everything or you can't rationally make sense of everything, it gives it a little bit more weight, I would think.
No, it does. Yeah.
And it's almost going back to Lovecraft. I mean, if you actually understood the other realms, it breaks your mind, because these things are not meant to be understood by people. So when, you know, you start to get into the things that man was not meant to know, and something like the Holy Trinity is, you're kind of supposed to know it, but you're not really supposed to fully understand it, because if you fully understood it, it would break your mind, because this is divine.
Right.
And your mind is not divine.
No, exactly. I like that analogy, and, you know, but again, disclaimer.
It's sloppy, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't mean to offend anybody by comparing Christianity to a fake religion put together by H.P. Lovecraft, but I think, yeah, the Elder Gods is a good analogy, where people in those stories who get magic or worship the Elder Gods, you're exactly right. Understanding all the workings of the Elder Gods breaks those people's minds, and the people who do fully understand it, well, usually they're not in any kind of state to do anything. It's kind of like the cultists, or kind of the sorcerers, who just accept it and say, this is just how it works. I'm not going to try and understand it, because I'm not meant to. So this is how it is, and I'm going to follow that, and I'm going to accept that. And it's kind of the same thing in Christianity. Again, not to offend anybody with that analogy, but yeah, okay, there are three parts of God that are all separate from each other, yet you kind of can't separate them because they're all the same thing. Okay, I'm just going to accept that, and no, it doesn't make sense, but it's a central part of the religion. And you know what? Yeah, you're right. Maybe I'm not meant to understand it. It just is, and that's how it works.
Yeah, I like that point about that's just how it works. We can't understand it fully, but we know that if we follow certain things, things will work for us. I also like the idea of using the Trinity, or something like the Trinity, of course, as a warning. And the idea is, this is really important, and this is true, but I don't understand it. That's fine. You're not meant to understand it. If you were to fully understand this, you know, it would break your mind, because it's not meant for people to understand. It just is. You know, you are not divine, so you can't understand it. You know, something like that. I don't know if I'm explaining it perfectly. Certainly, a book covered in human skin like Necronomicon might be a better warning, or a clear warning, right. You know, and put in a cabin in the woods. But something like this idea is just, if you want to learn more about this religion, be warned.
No, yeah. I just kind of thought about it now, but you kind of talking about the Necronomicon, you know, this book bound in human skin, and kind of having it being a warning to the players.
After apologizing about comparing God to the Elder Gods of Lovecraft, so, we're now going to get into comparing the Bible to the
Necronomicon. Let's just double down on offensiveness, right. But, like, I mean, The Trinity, the fact that there are three parts of the same God, I mean, the symbol becomes a triangle, which is a motif repeated throughout Christianity. So then because of that, whatever kind of rule that doesn't make sense, for lack of a better term, that you wrap around this religion that you're going to create or emulate or whatever, there are then symbols, yeah, you can use to hint at that, you know, whether it's, you know, using a triangle or having things coming in threes. Again, it's kind of difficult to make up a similar rule on the spot that kind of doesn't really make sense, but doesn't need to, so I can't think of any examples. But once you kind of hit upon that rule, similar to the mystery of the Trinity, I think it would be kind of easy to come up with symbols that are less gruesome than binding a book in human skin, but still signify that, hey, this is somehow connected to, you know, the religion, and so we should tread lightly. Maybe not be scared, but just more of a symbol to accept things at face value, even if they don't make sense.
Yeah, and that's another important thing about the Trinity, is it's something that you can really hold on to, like you said, with a symbol, a pretty simple symbol of a triangle, and repeating it. Or the idea of things in threes is a very important part of that religion. Or even replicating the Trinity when people cross themselves. And they form both a cross, but what they're also talking about is the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. So repeating that, so you have a pretty simple symbol or idea, but it manifests itself in many different ways. And it can be used, like you said, as a sign for different things. So when people do the triangle in this world, it could mean, of course, that they're adherents to the faith, or it could also mean that this is a mystery or something that we're not meant to know. I mean, you could have a door and it's like, oh, it's got a triangle. And it's like, well, that's the equivalent of top secret in this world or forbidden, you know.
No, I like that, yeah. I was kind of laughing a little bit, because usually whenever the player characters, or the players, have their characters come across, yeah, exactly. Whoa, a forbidden door with a triangle, well, we better not go in there, said in a stage whisper as they go to get the axe and, yeah, chop it down and go figure it out anyway. When has a big warning sign on any door actually kept the player characters out? It's more like, hey, open me next.
Going back to the mega corporations that are religious, picture that manila folder with the triangle on it. Although people are going to think Illuminati, but it just the mysteries of the Trinity. Or what you could do with that. Imagine the different ways you could do the Trinity. So the Trinity is the same for all the different denominations, but who they sub in. Of course, it's quite popular to do now is to acknowledge that, you know, half of the human race is female and incorporate women in more positions of power or divinity. So you could have, you know, the mother, the daughter, and the Holy Spirit. Yeah, simple change, but using the same idea.
So for the player characters who do chop down that door, even despite it being forbidden because it has the symbol of a triangle on it, and get blasted into nothingness, well, hopefully they did a couple rituals before and will be granted salvation. No, not good?
No, it was good. They'd just been blasted to nothingness because it was salvation and forgiveness. And I was like, I forgive you, pile of dust.
but you know, when they finally get to wherever they're going, it would be like, okay, yeah, here's your salvation. And I forgive you for chopping down that door.
Oh, great. But the Game Master already tore up my character sheet.
Yep. All the other things, because of all the other things you did. No, not forgive.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Christianity has so much about salvation, I mean, Jesus died for our sins, so you could say it's the birth of Christianity, like the salvation of man, and even in the Old Testament, I mean, there are elements of that.
Well, there's a couple things you could do, and again, all coming from Christianity, because, hey, you know, that's the topic. Yeah, the idea that Jesus died for everyone's sins, and that everyone who believes in this faith is therefore automatically granted salvation because that's why he died. And you don't even really have to do anything. Of course, not all sects or not all denominations of Christianity believe that. Other denominations believe you have to do certain things before you're granted the salvation. That could be something as simple as accepting Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, or it could be things like baptism, or kind of playing on the idea of salvation, going back to original sin in the Bible. The idea is, nope, you are damned unless you accept the salvation. And the natural state of human beings before that state is that they are damned.
You kind of took a dark turn on this one, yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about salvation and being saved, then I don't think you can talk about...
And you jettisoned that very quickly and go, and damned, and you're damned, unless you...
Fair enough, but what's the opposite of salvation? Because if everybody gets it...
Damnation, yeah.
Yeah.
On the positive side, I mean, there is the idea that everyone can be saved. I mean, if you look at missionaries, and certainly there's a dark side, and I'm sure Wayne will talk about the dark side in a moment, but it was kind of a motivator, is you would want to go to different places where people didn't have the same faith as you, and you weren't trying to necessarily dominate them, but you were trying to save them and educating them. And it certainly gives you a goal or a motivation to explore, and certainly gives you the will to overcome certain obstacles.
Right.
But also the idea is that you can make a lot of mistakes in your life, and then at a certain point you'll be saved if you do certain things. And who doesn't like a redemption story?
No, that's exactly right. And to keep things light, yes. Kind of the positive point here is, it doesn't matter how many mistakes you make or how terrible of a person you were before. Most of these denominations of Christianity believe that regardless of that, as long as you do some certain things, then yes, you will be granted salvation regardless of anything you did in your past life, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, even going so far as, I don't know if I would call it salvation, but essentially like the born-again Christians, mm-hmm. kind of everything before that is maybe not gone, but kind of as good as gone, you know?
So how do we incorporate this into a game? One way you can incorporate this, or one way you can use it, is to help you bring different races or different types of characters together, mm-hmm. which might not normally coincide. And let's use D&D because it's the easiest, but...
Right.
Having evil races, well, there wouldn't necessarily be evil races, because every race has the opportunity to be saved, or every individual in every race has the opportunity to be saved. Right. So you could have the dark elf, you could have the orc, you could even have the mind flayer, all in the same group working together, because they've made the steps in order to be saved or to become good. You think, well, Dritz is just cool, and it's great that he's got a heart of gold for some reason. I don't know how he got it, but yeah, I read the books, but yeah, he's just kind of born different. But here, if you have the idea of salvation as part of your main faith, then that's not so unusual. Everybody could understand that, well, hey, he's following the main faith, so he's entitled to salvation.
Yeah, it might get into missionaries and forced conversion, but as soon as you started talking about the normal D&D setting, because, that's the easiest. I immediately thought of dark elves, and it's like, what if they're not really evil? What if they just haven't accepted salvation? And again, if you take a dark turn, which I guess I'm skewing things towards, then they could be seen as evil by people who have been saved. But at the same time, I think it makes it a bit better, because on the one hand, I guess you would have it racially based, where, hey, all dark elves are kind of inherently evil. But, I mean, it's a bit more positive, where as long as they do a couple things, depending on the religion, they will be granted salvation and they will be forgiven for whatever they are.
Yeah, you could even play it as you're one of these evil races and you've done some evil things in your life, but now it's the time you're worried. I mean, this is your big motivation. You are worried about what comes next and you'd like to be saved before you pass away.
Right.
So that's why you're doing good things. It's not necessarily because you just want to be at the same table as your friends, but that could be something to work into your character. And of course, history doesn't really support us too much about, if you all believe in salvation, then we're going to treat you equally.
Right.
No. Yeah. I'm
trying to put a positive spin on it. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, the denominations and the schisms, one of our earlier elements, means that people were quite happy to point out the differences and focus on those instead.
Right. It's great you've accepted the faith. Unfortunately, you've accepted the wrong sect of it.
Yes. Yeah. So you're not going to be saved after all.
Right. No, I mean, the man with a past storyline is one that gets done a lot in, you know, popular media. And yeah, this person has done horrible things, but now they've either found religion or are trying to turn over a new leaf for whatever reason. And salvation and conversion, I think, would be, as you said, a great motivator to bring certain types of characters to the table where, you know, they have that background of being evil, for lack of a better term, but they're honestly trying to get away from that.
Yeah. And also, when you think of a lot of the fictional religions, you got to wonder, why would you have evangelists for that religion? Yeah, follow this God. Why? Well, because you'll be saved. Why would I be saved?
No, thanks. I'm fine with Cord.
Yeah, exactly. But if you have, you know, you have the idea of salvation, it's like, if you follow this God, or if you do these things, if you want to divorce it a little bit from divinity, if you do these things, you will be saved. I read this comic book a long time ago. I can't remember the name. And it was just a mini series. And it was set in a science fiction setting. And this woman demonstrates that she's really powerful, but they interpret it as she's very divine. And she has like very divine style powers, like glowing.
Okay.
You know. Right. So she starts like a crusade, or even Dune probably be a better example because people are familiar with that. Kind of starts a crusade that motivates and inspires the followers, and then they spread across the galaxy or spread across the stars to save people and introduce them to the faith. You know, some people are going to resist, but you think, well, we're going to keep trying, because if they don't accept her, then they're lost.
Right.
And we can't have that.
Right. To not put a dark spin on it, then yeah, the people who are spreading across whatever setting are honestly worried about saving other people. And, you know, the way to do that is to spread their religion and have the people to convert, because then they will be granted salvation. If that was done altruistically, yeah, then I think that would be something great to put into the setting. I mean, you could even do it selfishly, because, hey, that's what really has tended to happen in history. But if you were not going to make sort of the evil conquering horde, but I guess the good helpful horde, for lack of a better term. I mean,
they're coming to help us. Swarm us with their help.
Wow, this massive swarm of Tyranids, and one of them just stops in front of you and, excuse me, have you heard the good word?
Yeah, I got some reading material for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it got kind of comical, but, I mean, yeah. That would be interesting.
Yeah, but you can do the flip side. Imagine an antagonist that does truly believe they're trying to save you, and they're really motivated, and that can be pretty scary. I mean, how do you... You can't bribe them. You can't reason with them, in a sense, because they truly believe that they're doing you a great service by saving you. And if you resist, then the best thing to do is just to get rid of you, you know, wipe you out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, because if we can't save you, then you are being... Well, if we can't save you... We're going to have to kill you because your continued existence is an insult to our God.
Mm, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Thought I was getting dark. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sure. I mean, we have to acknowledge it. I mean, there is the flip side of salvation, or the belief in salvation. History can attest to it. Certainly these people become almost fanatics.
Right.
And fanatics for a good cause is great. Fanatics for a bad cause is terrible. Fanatics for a good cause who are doing it wrong is perhaps even more terrible. Yeah.
No, that's a good point. Because, I mean, yeah, maybe a bit of a tangent here, but yeah. A lot of times NPCs don't give up information, you know, and NGMs play them as absolutely unbreakable, which I think can be a problem sometimes. But when you do play the fanatic, then it makes sense. And the religious fanatic is one way to do that. And it's a way for there to be the classic good on good conflict, where you and I share the same ideals, however, where one side is being a bit more soft about it, this other side is being completely fanatical, and their only kind of choice seems to be convert for your own salvation or die. I guess it's kind of like the God Emperor in Warhammer 40,000.
In using the 40K universe, I mean, there's a couple stories where people have manipulated the Space Marines, for example, by manifesting themselves as a Sanguineus, or as, I think, like an emperor in one storyline. And they turned out to be, surprise, spoiler, Chaos Gods.
Mm-hmm.
Or Chaos Demons. But they've managed to whip the Space Marines, or those group of Space Marines, into a fervor, and they attack other Space Marines in that. So it's certainly a great plot device. Yeah. And you could even take a biological spin on the salvation. For example, like, let's say you've got vampires, and they want to spread their vampirism because they think turning people into vampires saves them.
It does. More preserves them.
Yeah. And I think the important thing about the salvation is it's got to make sense to the people that believe in it. So it should sort of make sense. And we talked about how the Trinity can be illogical, but it kind of makes sense too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the same with salvation. It should make sense. It shouldn't be completely divorced from common sense.
No, I think that that's a good point. And I think that's kind of true with anything. Maybe more so with religions. Religions that don't make sense in kind of fantasy or science fiction literature or game settings. I, at least, when I'm reading the book, kind of sit there, scratch my head and say, who would believe this? Kind of, why is this there? This is completely transparent. And this is just kind of like a plot device. Whereas, you know, the ones that make sense, I'm like, okay, I'm on board with this. You know, this makes sense. I could see people in the game world believing this for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And yeah, the having things be believable makes it, I don't want to say more realistic, but it's probably less of a suspension of disbelief to understand why it exists.
Mm-hmm. And to end on, I guess, on a positive note with the salvation and forgiveness is to think about the stories, or even looking at, like, when we talked about Batman in the beginning, there's the idea that people can be saved. And to borrow from Dark Knight Returns, it was written in the 80s, so I don't mind spoiling it a bit, but the idea that he believes that Two-Face can be saved. And it's just a question of whether or not Two-Face himself can believe that he can be saved and come around and be rehabilitated. And that's why you don't just, like, straight up cold murder people.
No, that's a really good point. And you kind of, you know, saying Batman doesn't kill people, or, you know, believes that Two-Face can achieve salvation and forgiveness. I mean, a lot of times in games you have people or characters who play pacifists, or, you know, aren't going to kill people, or the religions they supposedly follow have proscriptions against killing people. Or you're playing games where the characters are trying to be good, And good people don't kill bad guys. They try and get them to reform or repent and accept salvation. And I think using religion, and probably Christianity, since it's a topic, would be a really great way to do that. Like, okay, great, you're this religious denomination, and one of your core beliefs is salvation and forgiveness.
Yeah.
So that is a perfectly good in-game rationale to why you are going to let that bad guy go, even though you, the player, know they're probably going to come back and bite you in the ass later on, you know, kind of the recurring villain. No, we're not just going to straight up murder that person in, you know, the first scene of the first game, because that person can be saved, and we have to keep trying.
That's a good point. Why be a pacifist? What's the point? Yeah. But the point is that everybody can be saved, and everybody is entitled to forgiveness. Yeah, and it gives it that rationale, instead of just being the annoying person that just says, don't kill him. He or she has got a soul.
Right. Right. Yeah. Instead of being the, you know, kind of having the metagame as a player and going, well, I guess we can't kill him or her, so we'll just kind of let him go, I guess. Why? I don't know. It's like, nope, because hopefully the person will have learned their lesson. Even though they really won't.
Yeah. Let's not kill these orcs' children. They all have souls.
If they've been baptized.
It's an interesting thing is you could give them the opportunity to be saved. Take them to the river and dunk them in the water. And...
Right. I was thinking the person playing the cleric or the priest, like, hold on, guys, got to take a little detour while I baptize these bazillion orc kids over here. We'll just hand wave all that.
Yeah. Well, I guess you have a holy water. I mean, why have holy water?
Then it would be a miracle if it covered them all.
Yeah, if you don't have baptism, what's the point of holy water?
Vampires? Undead?
Well, that wraps up our latest Pantheon Pandemonium with Christianity, and we were certainly apologetic about this episode.
Right. Well, we did find out it was the largest religion in the world. So,
but as you can see, pulling from something you know, you can get a lot of good elements, and we certainly didn't touch all the interesting elements that you can pull from Christianity.
However, some of the interesting elements we did pull were the idea of a reboot, putting sort of a new religion on top of an old one without completely supplanting it, the idea of schisms or denominations and splits, minor or major, kind of in the same religion that from an outside perspective don't look that big, but from someone inside them are very important. Then we had the idea of the Trinity, where, you know, you have three gods that are pretty much the same thing, but not separatable, and how that doesn't really make sense, but you're not supposed to understand it and just accept it on faith, because it's a religion. And the last element we put out was salvation, and the idea that you can be saved and you can be granted forgiveness regardless of the type of person you were, as long as you follow a couple steps.
Do you believe in salvation? You will.
I have some literature for you to read.
And for the missing part of our Trinity, Chris, take it away.
Thanks for listening, and bye.
Bye.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Oh,
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.